Good evening and welcome to Local Motion. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Dining Out for Life is an annual fundraising event that raises money for AIDS service organizations. This Thursday, April 30th, you can dine at various participating restaurants throughout the KVNF listening area, and a portion of your check will go to help support the Western Colorado AIDS Project, or WestCAP. WestCAP was formed in 1985 in response to the need for testing, education, and support for people and their families living in Western Colorado with AIDS. This nonprofit provides services to HIV-positive clients and at-risk individuals in 22 counties on the Western Slope through case management and prevention. They also coordinate events and peer support groups. I spoke with Jeff Basinger, the Director of Regional Programs for WestCAP, and CJ Toby, who's a prevention coordinator at WestCAP, about the history of the organization and about resources for the GLBT community in Western Colorado. GLBT, for those who don't know, stands for gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. I started by asking Jeff how he became involved at WestCAP.
Well, I was diagnosed HIV positive myself in 1985 in Austin, Texas. And when I got back to Grand Junction in 1987, there was already a community response to people dying from AIDS in Western Colorado. And it was mostly parents and family members and friends who were providing end-of-life services and support with no organization. So WestCAP actually became incorporated as a 501c3 nonprofit in 1989 and had one part-time nurse as a case manager serving approximately 15 or 20 people with end-of-life services. And through the years, through the last 25 years, it's grown into, we cover 22 counties, all of Western Colorado, 40,000 square miles, an area the size of Kentucky. And we do the case management for over 250 people diagnosed with HIV or AIDS in Western Colorado. That's emergency financial assistance, help with medications, with insurance, housing, transportation, food, mental health, utilities, all kinds of great services. Then we also have our prevention side of the agency, where we have the only legal syringe exchange program in Western Colorado. A year ago, we had 11 participants. We now have over 120 participants in legal syringe exchange to help them reduce their risk of acquiring HIV or hepatitis C. We do the free rapid HIV hepatitis C testing. And then we also have a very unique program called Empower Colorado, which is designed to create heartfelt, heart-centered connections and community for rural gay, bisexual, queer men.
I wanted to talk about some of the other programs that you offer as far as support groups for the GLBT community. Let's start with ManReach. Can you tell me more about ManReach and how that started? And
well, Colorado ManReach, and REACH is actually an acronym, and it stands for Rural Education in Action for Community Health. And here in Colorado, as most people might imagine, the majority of HIV infection remains among gay, bisexual, queer men across Colorado, primarily in the Denver metro area, but over here in Western Colorado as well. And so recognizing that there were very little resources for most gay, bisexual, queer men in rural areas, and the consequences of that isolation, and the consequences of mental health and substance abuse and public sex parks and no safe spaces to meet and things of that nature drive new HIV infections underground. So fortunately, we have a colleague inside the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment who is very familiar with a community-driven organization in California. For about 20 years, the Billy Club has been providing safe support for rural gay, bisexual, queer men in Northern California. So Bob at the State Health Department had been going out there for a number of years and was really struck at how honest and open and safe the Billy Club was, and wondered why we couldn't have something similar here in Colorado. So three of us went out to Northern California in 2003 for a May Day gathering of the Billy Club. And it was profound. It was something I had never seen before or experienced before. And so we, the three of us, Bob in the State Health Department and Craig in Fort Collins and me here in Grand Junction, went about constructing Colorado ManReach. And so for a number of years, we did annual gatherings where we would get 40, 60, sometimes 80 men from around the state. Colorado ManReach is a statewide organization with local groups in local communities, and they feed back and forth to each other. And so Colorado ManReach has grown through the years. In 2005, we got our own 501c3 nonprofit status. And at this point now have had over 700 men participate in these statewide gatherings. And these are 2, 3, 4 days at a time in secluded, nice, comfortable areas of the Black Forest outside Colorado Springs, Stone Forest over in Cedar Edge, Sophia Retreat Center down by Cortez. There's a retreat center north of Fort Collins. And then we go up to up above Boulder at Calwood, a retreat center. So, and these are really, they're educational, they're support, they're informational, and they're time for people to share their stories in heart-centered talking circles about their challenges, their successes, and really discover community through being open and present with each other, not under the influence of drugs or alcohol.
What kinds of things have you seen happen at ManReach that you know had a positive impact? Can you give me an example of just how that kind of community and support will help somebody?
Well, especially during the heart circles, which are ancient tradition from many, many cultures around the world. And we have very good guidelines and agreements on how to conduct a heart circle. I have witnessed a person be able to disclose the suicide of a lover that was a closeted man here in the North Fork Valley. I have seen people be able to publicly disclose sexual abuse and sexual assault for the first time. I have seen people disclose that they are heroin addicts. I have seen so many just heart-wrenching moments where there's not a dry eye in the room with 50 men sitting around. And it's powerful. It can transform a person who is hiding these experiences to free them to be able to put it out there in the open and to not be judged, but to just receive support and understanding, even though it may be silent. It is definitely... we've seen some incredible growth in some of our men who struggle the most by being isolated. If they are not able to be honest with their family, friends, neighbors, their community, with who they are as a person, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity or gender or any of that, it really hurts people. They are internalized and externalized stigma. So the behaviors that we see in a person who or a population that can't be safe in being out with who they are, it perpetrates higher risk behaviors that normally wouldn't be happening if people had support and love in their lives.
Another program that you have through WestCap is called Empower Colorado. And CJ, would you tell us a little bit about that program?
Absolutely. Empower Colorado is a social group for gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning men. We focus on HIV prevention through social, educational, and volunteer events. In the past 6 months, we have held 25 events where our social events consist of meetings at coffee shops. We do hiking, and then also we do a 3-hour educational session every 3 months where we focus on role-playing, condom distribution, how we are going to interact with each other in possible future people that we have relationships with, whether they be sexual or just personal relationships. And we also do volunteer activities 1 to 2 times a month. We have volunteered for the Alternative Christmas Fair through Grand Valley Peace and Justice back in November. We have helped with the homeless overflow in Grand Junction, where the homeless shelter in Grand Junction was obviously packed and it was cold outside. So the churches in Grand Junction take 2 weeks a turn, and they then house the homeless population that can't get into the homeless shelter. So we volunteered for 2 weeks over the holidays, Christmas and New Year's, to kind of chaperone the homeless people to make sure that they had a place to stay in the cold weather. Another volunteer activity that we have done is we've worked for the emergency shelter program as well, where we would actually transfer the homeless population from one homeless shelter to the other during the cold weather with vans. We get anywhere from 20 to 30 participants for every, basically every activity that we do, whether it's volunteer, educational, or social. And we have events about every other week to every week. It just depends. It's a peer-led group. So when we meet for our coffee meetings, the guys actually get to decide what volunteer activity they do, what social events they want to do. So it's not really me saying, hey, we should do this or we should do that activity. The guys actually get to voice their opinion on what they want to do. We have been in two national contests now as well. One was through the Asian and Pacific Islander Wellness Center, the API, the condom distribution contest, where we submitted how we distribute condoms throughout the community. And how we've been able to do that is there's not a gay bar in Grand Junction, but what we've done is wherever karaoke night is going to be, that seems to be where the gay people tend to go to, or the college students. So we have hit around 5 bars now for their karaoke night in the past 6 months. And we have done a tutu night where we actually made tutus, wore the tutus out, and distributed condoms to everybody, whether you're male, female, gay, straight, bi, transgender. Because I think, and I'm pretty sure a lot of other people may agree with me, that the biggest barrier really to having safer sex and having that education is being able to talk about it. And we think by going around through Grand Junction to these local establishments passing out condoms, it's a way to kind of break down that barrier of acceptance. And then people are like, oh, these guys are passing out condoms. And then we make condoms readily available so people then want to talk about it.
According to a study released in 2014 by NORC at the University of Chicago and the Williams Institute, residents in 90% of all surveyed countries have become more accepting of homosexuality over the past 20 years. And the study, which examines responses to about 2,000 survey participants, this was between 1981 and the present. So they went over all these questions and found that people had become more accepting. Do you believe that's true? And what do you attribute it to?
I absolutely believe it's true, depending on what part of the world you're in, because there are still many parts of the world where homosexuality is punishable by death, and the Middle East and Iraq and Afghanistan and things of that nature. And so I was actually just looking at a map of global gay equality yesterday, and it is amazing how far we've come since 1967 Stonewall riots in New York City, which are often viewed as the birth of the modern gay rights movement. But I also remember going through Amendment 2 here in Colorado in 1992, when Colorado got the name as the hate state because it passed anti-gay lesbian by the vote at the ballot, to be able to legally discriminate against gay and lesbian. At that time, bi and trans wasn't even included. And so Amendment 2 it split the state. It was horrific and it was frightening. And Colorado Supreme Court found it unconstitutional in 94. The U.S. Supreme Court found it unconstitutional in 96. And that was the first time LGBT was coming on the scene by then. That had ever been ruled by a court, judicial jurisdiction, as a class of people. And since then, really, the March for Equality has just been amazing, starting especially in 2004 with Massachusetts being the first to legalize same-sex marriage. Now it's 37 states, and the Supreme Court is hearing it for all 50 states on the 28th of April this year. So it has hit that level. And then Brazil, Argentina, Mexico City, all of Northern and Western Europe, South Africa. It's amazing how far it's come, but it's amazing how far we have to go still when you look at what Russia is doing, when you look at what the 13 states who want to ban same-sex marriage are doing. We've still got our work cut out for us, but I'm amazed, actually.
So how do you think Colorado rates now as a state in terms of equality issues? Marriage equality, hate crime laws, employment laws, housing and adoption laws. Where are we as far as the rest of the nation goes?
Well, we still have a lot of haters in Colorado, but we're at 100%. We've got all the legislation covered. We've got same-sex marriage. We've got same-sex adoption. Colorado's come a long way, and it's been through the tireless advocacy and efforts of a very committed community and allies in the legislature, and having openly gay, lesbian elected legislatures inside the Capitol as well, and lobbyists and all of that nature. So it's Colorado's doing pretty good.
And who are some of the heroes in the movement that you think have contributed to where we are now in the state, or organizations that you feel?
Oh, my word. This is a stroll down memory lane. But Governor Romer in 1992 in opposing Amendment 2. And then also through the years, Senator Pat Steadman has been amazing. And we've got lobbyists at the Capitol. Thrive, the People with HIV/AIDS Initiative in the state of Colorado. And then Colorado Organizations Responding to AIDS is our advocacy and lobbying organization in Colorado that's comprised of about 20 different nonprofits who provide guidance on opposing, supporting legislation that will be helpful or harmful to our community, the HIV or the LGBT community. And it's, you know, at this point now, Governor John Hickenlooper has been Governor Ritter. Some of our top leadership has veto power and didn't, saw that they wanted to be on the right side of history.
Mm. And how do you think the media plays a role in attitudes? Not to dip into the tabloid news, but like, what do you think about Bruce Jenner's recent announcement? And do you feel like things like this are an opportunity for more people to learn about those issues and understand them better?
I would like to see CJ's take on this from his youthful perspective. Because I can go back to Renee Richards in the 70s, the first true transsexual male-to-female tennis star.
I think the only way for there to ever be acceptance, no matter what disease somebody may or may not have, what sexual orientation we may be, is for people to come forward with whatever it is about their self and expose the public to what makes us all so great, which is we are all different. And I think that's the biggest barrier of us accepting everyone is we're kind of scared about the unknown. But once we actually experience someone who is living with HIV, once we experience somebody who has gone from male to female, or someone who is gay or bisexual, then it's like, oh, well, you know, I've known you for 10 years and you've been gay this entire time, or you've been transgender. It breaks down those barriers of you're still the same person. You know, yeah. And the bottom line is that's what it is we are all people, and we are all different, and that's what makes everything so great.
Well, and I certainly, as a young child, remember the media portrayals in Hollywood of homosexuality in the 50s, in the 60s, in the 70s, and it was not favorable at all. It was sick, it was demented, it was tortured, it was dangerous. And so I think that, yeah, I mentioned Renee Richards, but also as you move up through the decades, and then you have individuals like Ellen DeGeneres, and then you've got Will and Grace, and then you've got elected officials in Congress in Washington, Tammy Baldwin, Jared Polis. You've got the first openly gay mayors of Providence and of Portland. You've got I hope we'll have an openly LGBT governor of one of the 50 states here soon. And on the drive up here today, we were talking about maybe in 2020, we'll have the first openly LGBT elected president of the United States. But yeah, we still have, while we can celebrate some of our accomplishments thus far in making it a safer world for everybody, and especially the youth at risk who are still bullied relentlessly, who face discrimination and stigma by their peers because of prejudice and bias in that's culturally institutionalized through religion and through stigma. We still have quite a ways to go, but we're getting there.
So I wanted to talk about that a little bit, too. In 2010, there was a survey of 4,600 lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Coloradans conducted by One Colorado Education Fund. And they found that 63% of LGBT people living in Mesa County have experienced verbal abuse as a result of their sexual orientation or gender identity. And 12% have experienced physical abuse because of who they are. What do you think that we can all do, whether you're LGBT or not, to if you witness something like that or to confront it? How do you feel is a good way to be supportive or confront these kinds of situations?
It certainly is a case-by-case basis. First and foremost, if somebody witnesses or is observing something like this, first do no harm and, of course, do not put yourself at risk of a dangerous situation also. So it is okay to go ahead and call 911 if it is of that nature. And if it is safe to step in and safely say, that's not okay. It's being mean, it's uncalled for, and the person you're attacking is as much of a human being as you are. And typically, these studies also show that it is the bullies and the aggressors who are attacking LGBT or suspected LGBT people due to their own inadequacies and their own lack of self-confidence about their own sexual orientation or gender identity. They're acting out because of their own fears and insecurities. So when I was doing education for WestCap for many years, especially with youth in like youth corrections or high-risk youth settings, I would bring that to people's attention. And quite often you would see a little bit of a light bulb go off in their heads going, I guess it is okay to let people be who they are as long as I'm comfortable with being who I am.
Do you think that this part of the state is a little bit behind as far as acceptance goes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Aspen actually was the first to include sexual orientation in its non-discrimination ordinances over 35 years ago, then Boulder, and now the whole state has it. But Western Slope has some pockets of intellectual and cultural progressive freedom, such as the resorts. And yet when you get into some of the other lower socioeconomic educational areas in Garfield County and Delta County, you know, get outside of the resorts and it's a very different picture. But yes, we always have joked my entire life that Mesa County especially is, you know, 15 years behind the rest of Colorado.
Why do you stay here when maybe, and I'd like to ask you the same question, CJ, when you know you're in an area of the country that is not very progressive?
Well, CJ's pretty new here, but I've got roots. I was born and raised in Glenwood Springs and moved here in 1962 when I was 9 years old. And so I've got roots and I've got family and I just love Western Colorado. It's in my nature, it's in my heart and in my soul. And part of the struggle also is offset by the opportunity to see progress and change and improvement. And so that's not accomplished through silence, and it's not accomplished by turning your back and walking away. It's accomplished by keeping your boots on the ground. And if you're not living on the edge, you're taking up too much room. So.
That's a good motto. That's great.
I spent 26 years growing up in rural Ohio, actually, which is very similar to the Western Slope here in Colorado, where there was not much sex education in the high school growing up, and I went to college in Ohio. Spent 25 years there, and then actually moved out west and spent 2 years in Palm Springs, California, which is the complete opposite of where I was in Ohio for 25 years, and had no idea as a gay man what HIV was. And then as I spent my 2 years in Palm Springs, I came across probably half of my friends there were actually living with HIV. So it really made, I don't know, kind of like lit my fire to get the word out, you know, that HIV is still something that is going on today. It wasn't just in the 80s or early 90s. And that I think that I can make the biggest impact since I did grow up in rural Ohio to now being in rural Colorado, trying to educate the gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning population in Western Colorado about HIV prevention, about how to treat other people, about what undetectable is, about the new resources out there like PrEP, which is pre-exposure prophylaxis, which is a pill that people who are HIV negative can take daily. And it will lower contracting HIV by up to 94%. So I really believe that why I'm here now is I think it's because I feel like I wasn't educated like I should have been growing up. And now I think I can make that difference by providing the resources and the knowledge to people who are, well, now they're younger than me.
We're really looking at a couple of factors here. We're looking at HIV and aging. Because a lot of us now in the state of Colorado, I think within the next 2 years, over half of people with HIV are going to be over the age of 50. However, where we're seeing most new infections remains in men under 30 in the gay population, gay, bi, queer. And nationally, it's 1 in 4 gay, bi, queer, trans men under the age of 25 are already HIV infected. In the transgender population, especially male to female, it's approximately 50% are already HIV infected. So the demographic of HIV is still pretty persistent and still needs to be addressed. In Colorado, though, for the last 5 years, we've consistently seen the rates of new HIV infection diagnoses go down. So nationally, CJ mentioned being undetectable. That means if people are positive and on the medications, taking them correctly, the virus can't be detected in their bloodstream and body fluids anymore. And that reduces new HIV infections by up to 98%. So that's big news. That's where care and prevention really are integrating. And getting people undetectable is critical. And getting them diagnosed and linked to care and undetectable is our mission. Because nationally, only 28% of people with HIV are undetectable. In Colorado, we're about 50% of people with HIV are undetectable. In Western Colorado, we're over 90% of people with HIV undetectable. But the meds still cost $2,000, $3,000 a month. Unfortunately, we've got health insurance enrollment guides in our office. We can help people, regardless of their HIV status, get enrolled into Medicaid or private health insurance through Connect for Health Colorado. We can help people access these medications, whether they're negative, high-risk negatives, or already infected. And it just is, you know, it's not the disease du jour, that it's not the death sentence, it's not the ravaging communities the way it was in the 80s and 90s. And so now it's even reaching the point where once every 28 days, one injection may be effective therapy to prevent people from infecting others. So there's just a lot's changed. But the, you know, the infection rate in nationally and globally has never gone down. And we still have, it's 14,000 new infections every day and 10,000 deaths every day. So we're doing our work. We've got work cut out ahead for us still to accomplish. And we're the agency nobody knows about until they need us. Either they're diagnosed or they're at risk. And we are seeing a convergence of HIV and hepatitis C and gonorrhea and syphilis that really is kind of unprecedented here that's actually getting national attention.
I've been speaking with Jeff Basinger, the Director of Regional Programs for Western Colorado AIDS Project, or WESCAP, and CJ Toby, who's a Prevention Coordinator at WESCAP. It was so great to have you here today. And if we could just tell our listeners a little bit more about the event that you have coming up this Thursday, April 30th, and it's called Dining Out for Life. And just to remind people where they can get information about that and how they can participate.
Dining Out for Life is actually a national event taking place in over 50 cities nationally. And this is the second year we've hosted a license for the event here in Western Colorado. This year we've got 20 restaurants lined up between Mesa County, Delta County, Montrose County, who are donating a portion of each diner's check to benefit the Western Colorado AIDS Project. It is a great event, and it's a delicious event. It's dinner with a side of hope, and it's one of the best opportunities to enjoy a delicious meal with family, friends, colleagues, neighbors, the whole community. Go out in force, support these local restaurants who are contributing proceeds to the Western Colorado AIDS Project. And for full information about all 20 participating restaurants in Mesa, Delta, and Montrose counties, they can come to our website, which is westcap.info.
And how else can people work with your organization or be involved?
Oh, they can become cornerstone donors. They can volunteer. We're getting pretty busy these days with all of the activities in our office. And certainly, if they want to go to our website, westcap.info, and contact us for any other opportunities, the ways they can support us, the email drops right in and we'll get back to everybody who wants to support us because we appreciate it. Couldn't do it without you.
Well, thank you again.
Thank you, Allie.
Thank you.
Again, for more information on WestCap or Dining Out for Life, visit westcap.info. Thank you for tuning into Local Motion. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Stay tuned. Coming up next, As the Worm Turns.